Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.
Kaboom!
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic. A sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
That it is. Welcome into the beginning of the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller. See, my name is on the marquee there because 4 hours are not enough, and we now do this thing 8 days a week. The question is, will we continue to do it 8 days a week? And obviously a spinoff of the radio show. But you found it. You've downloaded it. You subscribed. You've told your friends. You've told your enemies about it. And we welcome in. This is a gas bag chat. A chat with our friend podcast. We'll get to him in a second. We welcome in David Gascon from West of the 405.
Live in front of a studio audience here in wonderful, yeah, Sherman Oaks, California.
It is interesting that you are able to get that particular soundbite, but I don't really get any drops. I don't get any rim shots. I don't get any applause, any laughter, any of that
you
stuff.
You do a pretty good job of, you know, patting yourself on the back, you know, making it all about you, as you eloquently said. It's all about you during your shows.
Well, no, that was the Tom Looney School of Radio. Oh, that's not my school of radio. But I did take advantage of a situation that was bad and turned it into a positive.
You think that you learn that after he gave you advice on how to invest in the real estate market and that turned out to be a dud, you'd stop listening to him. But here we are into the month of September, and it appears to be no slowing down, you and Tom Looney.
Well, listen, I don't actually talk to Looney much. We text, which is not really talking. It's texting, and we go back and forth in that. But he is wrong about everything. Certainly his politics are all messed up, so we go back and forth on that. But enough about me. Oh, wait a minute. We have Gascon tonight. If you're listening anytime early in the day on Friday, this podcast, the Friday podcast, we made our maiden voyage last week.
We did.
Benny versus the Penny, YouTube stars, only on the YouTube, and it went better than I expected. There were only limited mistakes by you, and people seemed to enjoy it, and we had a live crowd that was interacting with the show on the chat on YouTube. It was a lot of fun, and more importantly, we won, at least I won on my bet, so we came out ahead, which is the most important thing, and we're going to do it again tonight. Same situation on the YouTube, and it is at 9 o'clock Pacific on Friday, which is midnight Eastern. Yeah. That's the witching hour, Gascon. We're going to be on the witching hour on the East Coast. We'll do it live, so that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. We'll pick every NFL game from the weekend card against the spread. We'll have winners on every single game, and we will attempt again to win some money.
And the best part is we will unveil something a little special for those that are actually watching the stream too. So you and I had talked about this over the last couple weeks, and it's a little give back to those who are participating in the broadcast tonight. So
what do we give? What are we giving them?
You know, it's something that has to, I'll give them a hint. It has something to do with your Iowa Hawkeye hat.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have, you know, I wore that the other night, the Iowa Hawkeye hat. It's a good looking hat.
It is.
Yeah, it's a good looking hat.
So
yeah.
I took some notes from the first broadcast, because I know that typically when you go on the air, you don't want to listen to what happened after when it's all said and done. So I have fourth wall, Christmas, and economy. Those are the three things that kind of jumped up.
I like that you're doing it Maller monologue style. That's good. I like that.
Those are bullet points, because
typical West of the 405 stealing.
Absolutely in love with breaking the fourth wall. Like that live feed with viewers typing in comments, you could not get away from. It was like a kid in a fucking candy store. It was like your first Christmas unwrapping a nice G.I. Joe or a Transformer, and you were just fixated on it until you broke it. Like, the broadcast went nearly 2 hours, which you didn't give me any credit for because I helped you through that two-hour fast that you needed to complete. And then on top of that, you said, this thing's going to suck. I know it's not going to be good. It will not be technically savvy. And then all of a sudden, you got filet mignon as opposed to, you know, bull testing.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, yes. I like that you made this all about you and to celebrate yourself, which is good. And as far as the chat, it was unexpected. So I didn't expect that to be an option. So I didn't think we'd have any real-time feedback. And B, it kept me from having to just focus on you. I could focus on other things, which is good. That's good. And C, this is the difference. Again, you are proving yourself.
What's that?
As not being a man of the people. I am a man of the people. Yeah. And I like to interact with the unwashed. You do not. You think these people are below you, the riffraff, right, and all those scum and the lowest common denominator, all the mean things you say about the Maller militia. You call them vermin and rodents and all that. But these are my people. Uh-huh. These are my people. I like hanging out with the peasants. I like hanging out with the hoi polloi and all that. And, these are my guys.
Well, I mean, like you said, is that if you're performing, which this is a performance, there's a stage and then there's an audience, and you never have the stage and the audience run parallel to each other. Usually one is on top of the other or vice versa. So I think in this point, the audience is behind the stage of what we're doing virtually. So if you don't mind for the future, let's temper this down a little bit because, you know, we got busy schedules here. And I know you got 2 hours to spare when you're at home doing shows from your bed and broadcasting.
Well, again, not in my bed. I'm in a professional radio studio, which has top-notch equipment. I have better equipment than I'd say 85% of the sports radio stations that are all raggedy and all that. I've been to a few radio stations. I've been blown away. I remember when I was in Oklahoma, in Norman, Oklahoma. I went to a radio station there because I had to record something. I was there for a college football game, and the radio station was at the transmitter site, and it was like a portable, like when I was in school, in elementary school, you know, they had those portables out in the back of the school. It was, the radio station was in that.
Oh.
I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is my profession here. But then you go to like New York or LA and they're in these big, massive skyscrapers and you've got showcase studios and all that. But there's more radio stations like the one that was at the transmitter in Norman, Oklahoma, in a little portable building than there are other places. But then, no, don't be knocking the home studio. I have great equipment here. I'm going to upgrade the studio later this month. I got some things coming in here that are going to make it even better. So I'm all about that, man. All about that action.
That's good. So we have one show in the book. We have another show tonight.
Yeah.
And I think this is important because the more feedback, the better, but also the activity level. Because we're going to be giving some things back to the audience. So they need to be aware of like if you like what we're doing, great. There's ways to support that. But if you don't like some of the things, then make sure that you voice those through the live feed or through the comment section or even on the podcast. You can rate, you can subscribe, and then you can chime in as well.
And I think what you're really saying is we need more people watching. I think that's what you're really saying. I think we and the most effective advertising.
Yes.
And you know this, and this has always been my thing. I have no ad budget. There's no marketing budget.
Zero.
The most important thing is what I call guerrilla marketing, word of mouth advertising. And that is, I don't need billboards. I don't need TV commercials, though they'd be nice. radio commercials. I don't need any of that. But the real hype, the real advertising is just you saying, hey, so-and-so, this is important. Like one of the cool things is one of the reasons Yelp is so popular and Amazon, people buy products based on the reviews, is because we value other people's opinion. Obviously, it's human nature, but really people we know, right? People you know who are in your circle, not in my circle, but in your circle, your family, your coworkers, you go to school, people around you say, hey, I got this thing on YouTube that's like kind of cool, but nobody knows about it. See, that adds some drama there, Gascon, because and really nobody knows about this, right? It's not like lights, camera, action. It's like, all right, turn on the little dusty candle or, you know, light the little candle and here we are.
So. Yeah. Which is fascinating to me because I don't know why you had a problem with my avatar picture. That if nobody knows, like, what's the issue with you and my back? I don't get that.
No, listen, I think that's great. I know you use that on Grindr, and I think that's pretty cool there. And I know you've had success with that picture. But, you know, I just thought maybe it was unprofessional. How about that?
Oh, all of a sudden, you have multiple pictures sent out to all these radio stations, and they're Photoshop pictures of you.
No, they're not Photoshop. Those are just old pictures.
Well, there's one fat, there's one skinny, there's one in between, and they get the dust cap on. So, I need the real Ben.
Well, the problem is, and if you really hate me and want me to get fat again, tell Scott Shapiro and management of Fox Sports Radio to have a photo shoot, because I guarantee you I will gain 80 to 100 pounds before said photo shoot. Yeah. It happens almost every single time. Very rarely in radio do they do photo shoots for the talent, and I have timed it, I believe, boy, probably 7 out of the 8 times I've had to do those things over the years, roughly, ballpark figure, I have ballooned like a turkey before Thanksgiving, and it never ends. So, you know, whenever I'm lean and mean, very rarely do I get my photo taken for those photo shoots. So it's only when I'm fat.
So then if we go, if you're on a video feed, then does that mean you can clean up a little bit? Can we get you like in a suit and a tie, or at least a dress shirt and rolled up sleeves? And
you want me to dress up?
Oh, why not? I mean, it's better than being in pajamas like
you were
last week.
No, I wore a nice t-shirt. I had a cap. Again, I'm relatable. Oh. I engage with the people. Oh. All right? I engage. You're Johnny One Note over there. Let me dress up here. I'm going to be like Kramer from the CNBC, and I'll do that. And
taking shots of the Speaker of the House this week.
I saw that. I did see that. All right, we're going very long. This is an interview situation, Gascon. Yes. This is a chat. You're so long-winded here. It's a bad job by you. You have buried the lead, my man. So we are excited. We're going to have here right now, he is standing by, Bernie Fratto. You know him. He's on Fox Sports Radio on Saturday nights. My old time slot, just 1 hour show. Saturday nights, 11 p.m. in the West, 2 a.m. in the East, straight out of Vegas. All the inside dirt right in the middle of the weekend. So essentially, when you lose your ass on college football, you listen to Bernie. He gives you some info, some important info on what's going to happen on Sunday in the NFL so you can get your money back. Conceivably, get your money back and all that. So let's welcome in now. He's worked in radio in Detroit, and he's a SoCal guy. So he's lived an interesting life in the radio business. Let's give it up now for Bernie Fratto. And Bernie, why don't we start with this? How the heck is that show doing?
Ben and David, first, thanks for having me. It's going great. I have my 2-year anniversary this week, and downloads have increased, and no one's tried to shoot me yet. But you're right, 11 p.m. Saturday night, Pacific time, and it's a one-hour show. And the centerpiece of the show, and of course it's called Straight Out of Vegas, the centerpiece of the show is, of course, sports betting. However, the content is a little bit more broad-based and eclectic than that. I like to offer journalistic commentary. I like to give insights, give my take, as they say. It turns out that we're finding that about 50% of the people who listen to the show don't even bet. However, they like to hear what we're talking about and maybe have bragging rights over their friends and such. And we try to drop a lot of knowledge. We try to be keen observers. We've been at this a long time. And I used to have a joke, you know, if you go to medical school and finish last in your class, they call you doctor. If you go to betting school and finish last in your class, they might call you broke. So we like to intertwine common sense strategies as well, like money management and various things like that. So we try to make it eclectic as we can, Ben, within the framework of being betting-centric because, you know, people want to hear your opinions on games and events.
Well, and Bernie, and I'm sure you are, because you do a professional show. I do an amateur show, so you don't have to worry about the crazy people that call up, right, and that harass you on social media at that time of night. Because that is a party time slot, Bernie. I know the downloads are good and all that, but in real time, doing the show live at that time, that is right in the middle of the weekend, and that is party central. And I know from years past, Bernie, that the people that are listening at that time live, they are feeling no pain, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. No doubt. Many folks are just exiting their favorite watering hole. They might have had a couple creamed immense, and they're in a certain type of mood. And what's interesting about that is I get people tweet at me during the show, or people tweet at the show. And what surprises me, never ceases to surprise me, is how many of those tweets are coming from the Eastern time zone. Philadelphia, New York, Virginia Beach, Virginia, wherever. And so, as you know, lunar hours, there are always listeners out there. I had a guy text me, he's listening from Sydney, Australia. So what's interesting is because of the wonderful platform that Fox Sports has, and you know, you've got 168 hours in the week. I just do one. All you guys do such a great job. People have it. They keep it locked on Fox Sports. So I find that more people are listening sometimes than we realize.
Oh, I agree with you. And the cool thing about that, it's a lot of fun, is that these people listening around the country, we're on Fox Sports Radio's on the American Forces Network or whatever they're calling it now. So we have a lot of military and non-military that happen to be working for the government that are in Asia or different countries around the world where U.S. military is, and they listen on the American Forces Network, so it's pretty cool. But that's cheating, Bernie, because it's like an afternoon show. It's not an overnight show for these people in these different parts of the world.
Like a wise man once said, we're in the air everywhere.
I don't know who would say something like that. I have no idea, Bernie, who would say that. But do you consider, I think of you as a radio guy. It's one of the reasons I like you, Bernie.
Yeah.
I think of you as a radio guy, but you've done a bunch of other stuff as well. Now, do you consider yourself part of the Rob Parker radio tree, or is that incorrect?
It's 100% correct. So let's unpack this. I began my radio career in 1994 at WTK in Ann Arbor. And the first night I ever, and I'm going to build up to the Rob Parker thing. I'll get there in a second, but the first night I ever had a credential was Friday, June 17th, 1994. I was at the old Tiger Stadium. They were hosting the Toronto Blue Jays. And that was the first year they put monitors in the press box so we could watch the game, but there was no sound. Well, that night we weren't watching the game. We were watching a little thing that became known as the O.J. Bronco Chase. And then later on, a fine gentleman's face kept popping on the screen, a guy you may or may not have heard of named David Gascon. And I'm watching this screen in my first night in the press box, and all these things are hitting me, and I couldn't hear what he was saying. So when I got home about 11:30 that night, I made sure I watched all the replays, and of course the rest is history. I spent several years at WTK covering Michigan football, had my own show on Sunday called The View from the Cheap Seats, another show called Inside the Frato House. And then Rob Parker and I became friends and started corresponding on things, and I found my way over to CBS Radio, 97.1, the flagship station, WKRK Detroit, which is now WXYT. And not only did I work with Rob, we covered the World Series, the Super Bowl, the NBA Finals. I also was a part of the Lions pre- and post-game show broadcast team from 1998 to 2008. And as I've told people, in that period, Ben, I saw everything. It was Barry Sanders last year and to all the way until 2008, which, when the Lions went 0-16 under Rob Marinelli, and I saw everything in between. So I lived three lifetimes covering the Lions, and then I left Detroit in 2010, February, came to Las Vegas, joined up with ESPN Radio here, co-hosted some shows, also hosted Rebel Extra, which is the post-game show for UNLV Runner Rebel Basketball. Along this whole way, Rob and I kept in touch. We've known each other for 25 years, and worlds collided because RJ Bell had started a show called straight out of Vegas, and they wanted to add a Saturday night show, and I got to know Scott Shapiro, and as I said, the planets aligned, and so about this time in 2018, 2 years ago now, they created the Saturday show. They said, can you make the commitment? I said, absolutely, and here we are.
Look at that, and the rest is history, and well, you do a great job, Bernie, on the,
thank you,
on the show, and now you're a big national radio star. You've become international, right? International radio star. But I love Rob. I went out, I've known Rob not as long as you, but I've always been a big Rob Parker fan. I like this style. His no-nonsense style and how he's willing to, tear people down and all that. A lot of these guys don't do that, the athletes and whatever. So I went out, one time we went out to have a meal with Rob, and we were just trading stories about, like, 90s radio and how different it was compared to what we can do now. Do you have a really good Rob Parker story, Bernie, from back in those Detroit, those wild local FM radio days in the Motor City?
Well, there's too many to tell. I'll tell you a couple of the classics, though, were in 2009, Rob used to joke with Rod Marinelli, you know, that his son-in-law, who became the defensive coordinator, married his daughter. And Rob used to joke with Rod, I bet you wish your daughter would have married a better defensive coordinator. And, you know, you might not have gone 0-16 and burnt the room down. Rob Marinelli didn't think it was so funny. But the big one is, I'll never forget, Ben, was when Jim Leland took over the Tigers in the fall of 2005, in the first year right out of the gate. They go to the World Series, and there wasn't a person in town. They played the St. Louis Cardinals that year. They were 83-79, and that was the David, the shortstop, but David
Eckstein.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, make a long story longer. The Cardinals beat the Tigers 4-1, and before the series, Rob was the only guy in town that predicted the Tigers would not win the World Series. And, man, you'd think he would have assassinated, you know, the president or something. They were coming at him right and left. And, you know, Detroit is a very provincial sports town. There's not a transient population there. So if you go on the airwaves and you're not being a slappy fanboy to one of their teams, well, Rob and I didn't do that. And Rob especially didn't do that. So time and time again, he would be a contrarian like he is with Tom Brady now. Well, he would do that all the time in Detroit. And so, he became sort of this caricature of himself, but obviously still one of the most popular guys in media there. But I'll never forget the 06 World Series when he predicted the Cardinals would win. And even after it happened, people called us up and just read Rob the riot act that he was a jinx and go back to New York. He never lived it down.
Wow. And I got to go back. You mentioned you saw everything when you were doing the Lions postgame. Now, I have buddies of mine that have done Baltimore Orioles postgame recently, the last couple of years when they've been terrible. Clipper postgame back. But you're doing the Lions coverage there. What were you doing a call-in show, Bernie? What is that like when you're losing every game and they don't win a game and you're taking phone calls? Now, Lion fans have to be used to it, I would imagine, after all these years. But what was that like for you?
It was amazing because it was the biggest love-hate relationship I've ever seen with any team in my life, and I saw it up close and personal. We would sign on, do the post-game show, give the particulars, do a couple of live reads, and we'd open up to the phone lines. Yes, our post-game, we didn't have call-ins in the pre-game, but we definitely had Paul Collins in the post-game. And what you would have, it was inevitable. Mark Wilson, who you also know, he did shows with us. We would write down, we would do an over-under, 6 minutes, 9 minutes. How long will it take for, A, someone to say, fire the coach, B, Ford, sell the team, right? Never ended. And, of course, the years under Matt Millen, which were absolutely disastrous, they rode him like a rented mule. So, one person after another would call in, and they would berate the Lions. We found new ways to lose. I mean, they just did it again this last Sunday. It's incredible. But their loyalty was there, and they'd sell out the following week. And every now and then, someone would call in and say, I'm getting ready my season tickets. That's it. I've had it. And I would pick certain callers, and I would fire back, and I'd say, no, you're not. No, you're not. This is a football town, and you know it. We got 8 home games every year. Okay, you're not going to move to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Yeah, they got a nice bed and breakfast there, but there's no NFL football there. You know damn well, oh, yeah, you're right. Well, I love my Lions. One playoff win, Ben, since 1957, January 6, 1992, when Dave Craig and the Detroit Lions beat Dallas and Jimmy Johnson 38-6. And that day on national TV, John Madden said, we're looking at the two teams of the 90s. Well, he was half right. The Lions got to the playoffs a couple of times under Wayne Fonts, but then he was gone, and then Bobby Ross came in, and then Gary Moore, and then Dick Geron, and then Rod Marinelli, then Mike, or before that it was Marty Morningweg and Steve Mariucci. I had like 6 coaches in 10 years, and it was a constant circus. But the biggest takeaway, Ben, was the incredible love-hate relationship, because callers would berate them, threaten to never go to a game again, but they'd be right back the next week because they couldn't break away.
Bernie, what's the wildest story that you can tell Ben and I? Because we've heard some doozies from athletes over the last couple episodes on podcasts, but you'd mentioned the relationship with Rob, and Rob had played me some old tapes of when he was in Detroit, and I said, hey, you have the shit that's on this tape you could not get away with now. Is there anything that comes to mind, whether working with him or anybody else, that you thought, like, I can't bring that up now because I'd get pulled right from the radio station?
Well, we danced across the line a couple times. In a minute, I'm going to tell you about the night. And Rob wasn't there that night. Rob had begun a pretty a pretty big career in earnest with the Four Letter Network. So, but on November 19th, 2004, there was a little thing in Detroit called the Malice at the Palace. I was there. We covered the game from the concourse, Mark Wilson and I. But before that, there's one thing, and I can't mention this guy's name for obvious reasons. But I happen to be in Vegas in July, I want to say, of 2007. And I'm getting on an elevator. I'm getting off an elevator. And one particular starting offensive lineman for the Detroit Lions was getting off the elevator, and he had his arm around two females. And, they might not have been his wife. And he looks at me, and I looked at him and said, "This is between us, right?" And I said, I was in Chicago that day. I don't know nothing. I'll tell you the guy's name off the air sometime, but I can't tell you his name on the air. But back to the Malice at the Palace. It's the most incredible story because no one knows the backstory, guys. The Indiana Pacers were coached by Rick Carlisle, and he'd been unceremoniously fired by the Pistons the year before, and he was angry, and they brought in Larry Brown. And so he had revenge on his mind, and they were leading that game by about 33 points. And you remember that the Pacers had won, I think, 60 games the year before. But in 04, the Pistons knocked them off in the conference semifinals, and Tayshaun Prince had that famous block, and they weren't supposed to win that series either. So Indiana comes to town spitting venom. Rick Carlisle's mad. The whole team is mad. And that was a great team. Jamal Tinsley, Ron Artest, the whole deal. And when that cup came let me back up. When Ben Wallace was fouled by Ron Artest and he shoved him, and Artest ran over late on the table, and an empty beer cup, people always tell the story wrong. It wasn't a beer. It was an empty beer cup landed on Artest's hands, and he went up on the stand. That scene was so surreal. I don't know if I can do it justice. It would take me a full hour to tell the whole story, but I'll tell you one little known detail that no one ever talks about. One of the referees on the floor that night, Tim Donaghy.
Wow. I was here at Fox Sports Radio after that game. We were doing the overnight, and that's all we talked about. We tried to do Zapruder film style coverage, breaking it down frame by frame. It is right up there with my top moments. And I wasn't even there. You were there. You were lucky enough to be there, but I was just watching on TV and I couldn't believe what I was watching. I was like, wasn't it like a Friday night or something like that? It was a Friday night ESPN game.
It was a Friday night at November 19th, 2004. And the reason I remember it so well is our show was from 7 to 11 p.m. And we were going to our final break to sign off. And I walked to the concourse into look at the game and see what was going on. And it was a miracle because at precisely that moment, Ben Wallace was going in for a meaningless layup. And that's when Artest fouled him and everything broke loose. We had about a four-minute break. I watched as much as I could, and I ran back to the mic. You're not going to believe what's happening here. And then, as they say, the rest is history. And that game set back the Indiana Pacers franchise, I think, 10 years. I mean, there were $5 million in fines, 88 games missed. It ruined their season. The Pistons ended up making it back to the finals that year and losing to the San Antonio Spurs in seven games, thanks to Big Shot Bob. But the funny thing is that the Malice at the Palace has become one of those infamous stories that everybody seems to know about. And last November 19th, which was the 15-year anniversary, I got asked to go on several shows. But I can imagine what it must have looked like from your end, Ben, as well, because you've pretty much seen it all in the world of sports. But how do you describe that when you're watching it?
Yeah, it was crazy. It reminded me a little bit of, I don't know if you remember, this is often forgotten, the Dodgers in, I think it was the year 2000, we're in Chicago, and somebody stole one of the I think it was one of the pitcher's hats.
It was a catcher's hat.
Catcher's hat.
Oh, yeah, no, they went into the stands,
Yeah. So that was my thought, because I was actually with the Dodgers when we went back. I wasn't with them on that trip, but when we went back to Chicago, and they had like extra security because they were, those big mean Cub fans were going to mess with the Dodgers and stuff because that was their first trip back since that happened. But that was the closest, and I don't even think that's a good comp to tell. That is so unprecedented. I mean, there have been situations where maybe one or two guys went in the crowd. We've all heard those stories over the years, maybe back in the early days of baseball, or even more recently with Vernon Maxwell or Tony Phillips, the baseball player that went in the crowd in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
To have half the team. And you remember Jermaine O'Neal throwing that haymaker? I thought he killed the guy, Jermaine O'Neal, with that punch. So, I mean,
and Jermaine O'Neal played that night in the Malice in the Palace. That's what you just alluded to, right?
Yeah. The punch he threw, the guy that came on the court and he threw the punch, was just...
If his left foot hadn't slipped on some sort of moisture on the floor, he would have killed the guy. If you go back and watch the film, his left foot slips. It's like a kicker when your pivot foot slips, and he was unable to really launch. But yeah, you remember that. That's pretty good detail. Yeah, that was amazing.
Hey, Bernie, real quick, and for you and Ben too, the catcher was Chad Kruder with the Dodgers. I don't know if you guys remember him, but that was
remember Chad very well. Yeah.
No, I remember. Listen, that Chad Kruder. Let me tell you something. All right, that blankety blank. I was sitting in the press box at Dodger Stadium. He hits a foul ball. And he hit my laptop and destroyed my laptop in the press box at Dodger Stadium. And then I was all pissed, you know, because I'm a struggling radio guy. And I asked the Dodgers, I said, you got to pay for this, you know. And at the time I was doing Dodger postgame stuff, they had a big meeting. And they decided after like five executives of the Dodgers got together. This is back in the end of the O'Malley. O'Malley must have been gone. It must have been the Fox time.
Era, yeah.
Yeah, the Fox era. And they got together, and they said, sorry, Ben, you're on your own.
You know, one of the things that I enjoy about listening to your show, and the guys, Brian Finley, can attest, I'm a radio junkie, is, Ben, because you have this rich history of LA sports, which I can completely relate to, because I grew up in SoCal before I moved to Michigan, are the events that have marked time in LA sports history. And here's where I'm going with this, guys. I've led this odd, idiosyncratic, unexplainable life that I have been at these sporting events, and odd things have happened. And a local writer here who just retired, Norm Clark, he was like Las Vegas' version of Army Archer, wrote an article about me, and it's out there somewhere. I'm going to give you an example, Ben. December 9th, 1977, the Forum. I'm there. Rudy Tomjanovich is punched by Kermit Washington. And my biggest takeaway is when Rudy's head hit the floor, it sounded like someone dropping a bowling ball from 6 feet. Because I interned at the Forum for 4 years. July of 1974, I'm at a baseball camp at Pepperdine. The coaches take us out to this game at Dodger Stadium. I see Tommy John walking off the mound holding his left shoulder. That's the game that hurt his arm and he ended up getting Tommy John surgery. The other night, Jason Smith and Mike Harmon were talking about the Miracle Bowl, December 19th, 1980. BYU and SMU, where BYU trailed 45-25 with 5 minutes to go. Fourth and five, Lavelle Edwards, BYU's coach, tries to send the punt team on the field. McMahon yells at him and says, get the F off the field. And BYU scores three more touchdowns and beats Craig James and Eric Dickerson. I was at that game. I'd been recruited to play baseball at BYU 2 years earlier. I made friends with a bunch of the guys. I didn't go there. And I'm right behind the bench, and I'm looking at this and saying, we're about to have the 40-year anniversary of this game, and I remember like yesterday. All three of those events took place in California. And then you add in situations like, well, what I just told you about, the Malice in the Palace. How about 86, Ben, October of 86, the Donnie Moore game. There. We got 1 foot on the rail, and Dave Henderson hits the home run. The ball goes up in the sky, stays up in the sky 15 minutes, and comes down on the other side of the fence. 3 months later, Donnie Moore kills himself. So I could go on all day about that, but one of the reasons I brought it up is because when you reference some of those L.A. historical perspective takes you have, I absolutely relate to them, and I'm like a little kid looking through the fence saying, this is cool.
Yeah, well, we both appreciate the great Jim Healy, the old radio guy. That's one of the reasons, Bernie, I got into radio. I loved the Jim Healy radio show, and I thought he was amazing, and all the drops, and they weren't even dry. They had a carts, you know, back in those days in radio, you had these big, bulky carts, and it was so good, and I loved every day. 5:30 And then the dreaded 6 o'clock tone that would be played. And there's a website that still has all the old Healy clips on it. And there's some YouTube videos of people, because people who didn't live in L.A. or, you know, young people have no idea who the hell Jim Healy is, because he's been gone for a while. But you remember Jim Healy, when he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
And they had this big ceremony, right? It was a big deal. I just started in radio at the time, and I couldn't go. I was working in San Diego. But as I remember the story, that was the day that Magic Johnson announced he was HIV positive. And so all the media that was going to be covering this Jim Healy thing all had to leave to go to the forum because they had a press conference. And that was like one of the big, a stunning story, right? It was, oh my God, I remember how crazy that was at the time. But that was the day that Jim Healy had his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
That's
and his
amazing.
kid, Bernie.
Did you work for the Mighty 690?
Yes, I worked with Hacksaw. I interned with Hacksaw. We've had
I'm going to say that's probably 90, 91-ish, what you're talking about, that vintage there. And, of course, those were really some of the real golden days of L.A. radio. I mean, if you were driving, as we all know, the traffic in L.A. is what it is, and that's what sustained me. And I would listen to Healy, and I'd listen, who could forget Hacksaw, right? Okay, San Diego, let's get back to the jam-packed phone lines. Rancho Penasquitas, first-time caller. Nice to hear from you. You could disagree with me, but you'd be wrong. But Raleigh, we got an open hockey line. I mean, that was our L.A. radio then. And then Healy would come on, and it was just 30 minutes of just pure bliss.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Anyway, I'll tell you a funny story, Bernie. When I first as I look back at the timeline, I was not working in radio at the time the Healy thing happened, but I was still in school. But then when later on, when I got into radio a couple years after that, and I was going to these games in the press box and stuff, and I met Stu Nahan. And every time I saw Stu, may he rest in peace, he was in the press dining room eating. And I was just laughing because the Jim Healy show used to play, as you said, the drop. So they called him Silvertip Stu and all that. It was hilarious because he was always, Freeloader's Update and all that. And it was quite impressive. And you mentioned Norm Clark, Bernie. And I know Norm a little bit. I actually had a meal with him years ago in Vegas when I was doing my website, my gossip site, and he was like the go-to any for years, anything in Vegas. He was the Page Six, he was the TMZ of Vegas, and the catchphrase, the marketing phrase, if it happens in Vegas, it stays in Vegas. Well, not if Norm found out. Not if Norm found out. And he was so good. And as I'm sure you know too, he was a baseball, wasn't he, worked for the Associated? He told me the story. He worked for the Associated Press.
He did. He worked many years in Denver. You come to town and we'll grab Norm and have dinner on me. Norm's a great guy. A wonderful guy with a black eye patch. And Norm and I became friends in 2012 purely by accident, because one of those years, Ben, I was doing a radio show, and Cal Poly San Luis Obispo got a bid for the big dance in the NCAA tournament. And this guy calls in and says, well, who are they? I don't know anything about them. I said, that's all you need to know about them. It's in 1976. Their starting shortstop on the baseball team was Ozzie Smith. And their starting right fielder was Danny Gans, who I'm sure you know, Ben, had a great show here in Vegas for many years. God rest his soul as well. Yeah. And Norm heard that on the air, called me. We became friends and said, that's some pretty good minutia there, because he knew that, right? But you're right. Norm was the go-to. I mean, when Britney Spears was married for 50 hours, she called him and said, I want you to write a column and set the record straight.
Wow, that's pretty good. And Bernie, I was reading online. Did you play minor league baseball? Is that right? Back in the day?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I did sign with the Cincinnati Reds. Larry Barton Sr. signed me. He's since passed away. They might have shot him. Very short-lived career back in the day. I ended up having bone chips on my elbow and had trouble hitting a slider. But yeah, I did. I did. I played. Yep. I had a brief stint in the Cincinnati Reds organization.
Did you spend a year or 2 years or
27 games?
27 games. You're like Moonlight Graham a little bit, right? You're the Moonlight Graham. And did you play with anybody that made it? Did any of the guys?
Oh, my goodness. Well, in college, I played with Tim Flannery, Marty Castillo, Jay Pettibone. Played against everybody in Southern California. You made it. And then in the organization, played a bit with Eddie Milner, Paul Householder, Dave Van Gorder. And then what's interesting is Back in the day, they used to have these winter teams, and Larry Barton Jr. put together this winter team, and we'd play colleges on weekends. We'd go to USC and play a doubleheader. We'd go to Cypress College and play a doubleheader. I don't know if they do that anymore, but this is 1979. And right before spring training, a lot of the big leaguers would come out and work out with us. So Davey Collins came out, Eric Davis came out. That was before Eric Davis' time. He wasn't in the big leagues yet, though. But I caught Frank Pastore for three innings one day. I caught Mike Lacoste. They'd come out when they'd get ready. I don't talk about it much because it comes off like Al Bundy, you know, you don't want to come off like Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite, you know, he could have won the championship back in 82. No one cares. But yes, I did.
Well, Bernie, that's interesting, man. That's cool. You know who also didn't make it in the minor leagues was Scott Boras, who's become the greatest agent of all time, right?
I spent an afternoon with him. There's actually a picture of me. I finally put it on. What happened was back during the Last Dance. I remember when Michael Jordan signed with the Birmingham Barons, and I'm telling you, Ben, and I know both you guys know sports as well as anybody. If you go to AA and hit 202, you got some junk in your trunk. People don't realize what a good level of baseball that is. I was shocked looking at Jordan's swing and the way he transferred his weight too quick, and it was really arm jam. How did he hit 202? I mean, he even hit a couple of home runs. The only thing Jordan did that I liked was he went first to third like a maniac. However, he was such an incredible competitor. Ron Shuler said if he hadn't gone back to the NBA and there hadn't been a strike, he probably would have gotten a September call-up. But anyway, some guy tweeted at me and said, Jordan sucked, he couldn't play. I said, that's not fair. That's not fair. He competed. If his name would have been Eddie Gazinski, he never would have signed because he didn't have any one tool that made you love him, but he could compete. I said, but having said that, I still think I would have beaten Michael Jordan in a home run derby contest, and I stand by that. And then I sent him a picture of me. If you go to my Twitter account on the right, you'll see a picture of me in a Tampa Tarpons Cincinnati Red single uniform. I got a little bit longer hair there and a fresher-looking face. So then I put a picture of me up there, and so that's enough of that. I guess that's enough of that.
Hey, Bernie, I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned Vegas earlier with what's going on, what's the climate like? Because you know, we've all talked about sports eventually returning back in full form. And now the NFL is king, and you know Ben and I have done some other things with Benny versus the Penny. We're doing some streaming live now, but I mean, there's a ton of dudes that are putting money and good action on these NFL games, whether it's on Thursday Night Football or just the weekend affairs. So, have you seen any kind of uptick, or is everything else pretty much the same in terms of action across the gambling lines?
Yeah, it's a good question. So it's not where it was last year at this point. They're still down about 20%, but it's far above what they thought it would be coming out of COVID. The handles on games have been extremely healthy. A lot of people betting. And one of the things, and it's not just Vegas, guys, one of the things that has really enhanced the impact of sports betting in general is legalized sports betting. As you know, May of 2018 passed by the Professional Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992 was overturned. And since then, the hypocritical Roger Goodell, who wouldn't even take Vegas' advertising money back in Super Bowl 38, 2004, I mean, the NFL and their teams have formed 28 marketing and data sharing partnerships with various enterprises. 18 states are now legal. Four more states have ratified it. They just don't have the brick and mortar set up yet, or the app technology set up, and seven other states have legislation. So to answer your question, 33 million people in one form or fashion bet on an NFL game last Sunday. And here in Vegas, if you come to town during football and walk into even though the social distancing is a little different and the way the books are set up now are following protocols and people are wearing masks, if you were never here before, you'd never know the difference. The traffic is robust. The betting on the game is heavy, and I mean heavy, heavy betting on the game. Last Thursday alone, and there's always big bets, right? A guy put $110,000 on the Chiefs -9.5 at the Mirage. Another guy put $100,000 on the under of 53.5 at Aria, and you saw it landed on 54. Yeah. So there are big bets. You've got the U.S. Open, and Ben, you brought up a good point. What was it like during COVID? Well, believe it or not, even when the casinos were shut down and the sports books were shut down for 76 days, people could still bet on apps, and about 63% of all bettors in Vegas now bet through their app. And back in March and April, they were stuck with Korean baseball, Russian ping pong, Bundesliga soccer, UFC. But even in spite of that, people were still looking for action, and they were still betting, even though the four majors weren't back. Now that they're all back, it's bonkers.
Now, Bernie, can we set a line in Vegas for when a certain guy will throw up after he eats bull testicles?
Well, here's the thing. People always ask, what does Vegas say about the election? What does Vegas say about the Academy Awards? There's a simple rule here in Vegas in the gaming commission's bylines. It's got to be in a box score. There's got to be a final result in the box score, because if anybody can control the outcome, or anybody, if an outcome could be predetermined by someone's information, you can't bet it. Now, that's funny. Maybe someday we'll get to something like that, right? But they're not. No regulated gaming establishment would set a line on something like that. Offshore? Sure, why not? You can do just about, you go to some of these offshore sites, which I'm sure you've heard of, Pinnacle and Bovada and such. You can bet all kinds of stuff on that. But here in what's considered a regulated market, it's got to be in a box score.
Well, and Bernie, there's no reason to put a line. It's 100%. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to eat the damn bull testicles. My wife's going out to the butcher shop, because I'm told you can get those at a butcher shop. Who knew that any butcher shop supposedly has those? But so I'm gonna pick those up, and I guarantee I'm going to make a YouTube video. I can't get to Denver, obviously, because of COVID and all that, so I'm not traveling anywhere. But when I eat these, the people are going to claim that they're not what they are, that I'm faking it or not. But I guarantee you, all right, I'm going to eat one. That's all I'm eating, Bernie. One bull testicle. I don't know if you eat two, one, and then that's it. And so I'm going to get crap for it, but screw all the haters. It's going to happen. If not this weekend, it's going to happen in the next couple weeks, because I'm not sure if we'll be able to get it done this weekend, but we're going to try. So it's going to happen.
Ben, if I could share something with you, I'm sure you know Hank Goldberg, right? Hammer and Hank?
Yeah, Miami legend, sure.
Yeah, so he moved to Vegas 2 or 3 years ago, and I know Hank pretty well, and I've been on a couple of betting panels with him. I like him, and I'm pretty sure I got his phone number, and I'll get it to you, because we did a seminar here at Sunset Station 2 years ago, NFL preview, and we all had dinner afterward. And Hank asked me a couple of questions about Detroit, because I spent 17 years there. Actually, I was born there. Then we moved to California. My mom actually went to University of Michigan. But here's where I'm going with this. Hank goes, I have one distinct memory of Detroit. I was downtown somewhere, blah, 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 back in the mid-70s. And I went to this restaurant, and it's allegedly served bull testicles. And I ordered them and had them. And I go, how were they? He goes, they're a little tough. I don't think Hank was making it up, so we gotta get you two connected or something.
Well, listen, I was reading online, Bernie, because I have no life, of like how to properly prepare the bull testicles, and so you gotta like take the vein out, which sounds disgusting, and then you gotta cut it thin. My buddy Bob, who does radio in Kansas City, he's had them. He said you gotta cut them thin, and then you gotta bread them and deep fry them. So my theory is, if I cut them thin, I bread them, and it's like eating a chicken nugget, and then I just dip it in barbecue sauce. How bad could that be? It can't be that bad, right? It's got to be okay.
Well, I'm with you. I think maybe throw a little A1 or ketchup on it, and then, I've always said, no matter what you put A1 on, it tastes like A1. You put it on a boot, it tastes like A1, so throw a little A1 on there. No one said you couldn't do that, right, Ben?
Yeah, exactly. See, there are no real rules on this. There's no real rules on this. It's just that I have to consume the bull testicle. How I consume the bull testicle, that is a different situation. That is a different situation. All right, listen. Bernie, I love you, man. Continued success. You're dominating there. Saturday nights, everyone needs to listen to you. If you haven't heard Bernie's show, straight out of Vegas. And remember, the most important number in gambling, right, Bernie? 52.4%, right? Isn't that the most important number in gambling?
Yeah, there's a man with knowledge. If you, that's your break-even point, because if you can win more than 52.4% of your games, you can be profitable. That's exactly right, Ben.
Yeah, you got to make money. It's all about making money. All right, Bernie, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Pleasure being with you guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brady.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.